Welcome, everybody, to the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello again, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, broadcasting from BBS Radio 1, and welcome to the show, where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Our very special guest today is guitar hero and songwriter for the Dead Daisies, Doug Aldrich. You need neither an instruction manual nor a university education to love the Dead Daisies' music. Their songs unerringly hit their listeners' autonomic nervous system, immediately take root in their hearts and souls, and force them to move along to the rhythm. There are a lot of very good reasons why this kind of rock and roll has never gone out of fashion. Band members David Lowy, John Corby, Doug Aldrich, Marco Mendoza, and Brian Tichy all agree. Our songs are simply timeless, immortal, and classic. That's why working with the Dead Daisies is so much fun, and that's why the reaction is always phenomenal, no matter when and where this band turns up. With his keen instinct and clear vision, founder, guitarist, and songwriter David Lowy has put together an amazing group of musicians that has caused a stir with different lineups, generating a consistently high level of individual renown and outstanding artist substance since 2012. While initially Richard Fortus and Dizzy Reed of Guns N' Roses, Rolling Stones members Daryl Jones and Bernard Fowler, as well as John Tempesta and Charlie Drayton of The Cult, among others, were involved, Lowy has once more enlisted international stars for the recording of the Dead Daisies' third album, Make Some Noise. For me as a vocalist, this kind of high-caliber lineup is an absolute dream come true, enthuses John Corby. When you work with the Dead Daisies, everybody's amazingly motivated to deliver top performances. So their new release lives up to its programmatic title. It would be difficult to imagine a rock album that sounds more powerful, energetic, and vibrant. Make Some Noise celebrates the kind of classic rock and roll that has gone from strength to strength since the early 1970s, and that sweaty clubs, hallowed concert halls, arenas, and stadiums would be impossible to imagine without. Strong hooks, intense riffs, which have guitarist Doug Aldrich prove his outstanding quality, supported by a rhythm section consisting of drums and bass that march forward without compromise, plus Corby's charismatic vocals. This album rocks from the first to the very last note. Cross-references to renowned bands from the past, feature just as much as highly contemporary sounds and trend-setting directives. A number such as Long Way to Go couldn't have been delivered better by AC/DC. Mainline and Last Time I Saw the Sun bring to mind the likes of Aerosmith and Mr. Big. The title tracks, Make Some Noise, is nothing less than a self-confident, tongue-in-cheek rock statement that summarizes this album's general direction and may be taken quite literally. Namely, when a euphoric audience gives way to their enthusiasm. Not forgetting the wonderful Song and a Prayer with its guitar licks and anthemic chorus reminiscent of Guns N' Roses. Cross your heart, this is the kind of superb composition that the public has been waiting for since Paradise City. Having said that, stylistically, the Dead Daisies may be paying homage to the long tradition of rock music, but they prove their unconditional independence with every one of their tracks. Make Some Noise quotes renowned icons, but also resurrects like its two predecessors, the Dead Daisies 2013 and Revolution 2015, almost forgotten rock classics. While in the past, the Dead Daisies brought back to life numbers like the Alex Harvey success Midnight Moses and Helter Skelter by the Beatles, both celebrated enthusiastically by the group's fans. Make Some Noise sees new incarnations of The Who's anthem joined together in Creedence Clearwater Revival's Fortunate Son, forges an arc to the most colorful era of rock history. Producer Marty Fredrickson has made a significant contribution to the album's success, furnishing Make Some Noise with a breathtaking sound at the studio in Nashville. As David Lowy puts it so aptly, the Dead Daisies mean pure fun to me. This band is first and foremost about our passion for the kind of music and about celebrating classic rock and roll. Because one thing is clear, if we have fun in the studio and live on stage, that spark is bound to ignite our audience. As David Lowy puts it, it will ignite our audience. The lineup consists of Brian Tichy, formerly of Ozzy Osbourne and Foreigner, drums David Lowy from Red Phoenix and Minx, on guitar John Corabi from Motley Crue and The Scream, Doug Aldrich of Whitesnake and Dio, and also guitars Marco Mendoza from Thin Lizzy and Whitesnake on bass guitar. It is my great pleasure to welcome guitar hero and songwriter for the Dead Daisies, Doug Aldrich, to the Ray Shasho Show. Welcome to the show, Doug.
Hey, Ray. How are you, man? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing good, man. Where are you today?
I'm actually in Philadelphia. I'm visiting my mom and dad. It was just, they live in Philly. I went to high school here, and last night we played in Portland, Maine, and the Daisies all went back to Boston. We were kind of hubbing out of Boston, but I caught a ride with the Kiss crew who was coming to Philly. And they took care of me, got me down here safe, and now I'm at my mom and dad's for a little family catch-up.
Cool. Yeah, I'm very familiar with Philly. I'm originally from the D.C. area, and I actually used to take my kids to Langhorne.
I lived in D.C. too. I lived in Rockville, Maryland too for a while, in Potomac, Maryland.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we're from the same neck of the woods, man.
Yeah. I lived in Alexandria for a while, and I lived in actually in Southern Maryland in Waldorf, and I was born and raised in Baltimore. So yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so when the Ravens get together with the Eagles, watch out, man.
I'm not worried about the Eagles. It's difficult, man. They just traded away their starting quarterback, so I'm not even thinking about it. I'm always going to be a fan, but I'm actually kind of interested in the Rams now that they're back in L.A. This is where I call home now.
Right. I think that's pretty cool that they went back to L.A.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. For they were gone for a long time, and
right.
I'm just interested to see how it goes and see if the fans support them. You know, I think when we had the Rams and the Raiders, mm-hmm. I don't think there was the fan support, but maybe it'll
right.
be different.
I agree. Now you're on tour with Kiss this
yes.
month, all this month,
yeah.
And you were on tour with Kiss last month as well, right?
Yeah, we started. I guess it was August 10th or something. We came.
Right.
We had played a show in Zurich, Switzerland, and then we flew directly on August 9th to meet with Kiss, and we started on the 10th, and we go until September 10th, which is coming up. So we're just winding down right now with the Kiss guys, and we are going to be taking a couple-week break, getting back together with family, and then we'll set out for... We're going to be doing Japan in October, and then we go to Korea. We're doing some USO stuff in Korea, and then back to Europe. We're doing the Kiss cruise in beginning of November, I believe, and then we go back to Europe until Christmas.
Yeah, I've got the dates. Let's see, the 7th are going to be in Connecticut, right, Bridgeport?
That's right.
Right, and then you'll be in Richmond. I know about the Richmond Coliseum. A lot of great shows there. That's going to be on the. Is that the 9th? And then the 10th, you'll be in Huntington, West Virginia. Then those are all with KISS. Then you're going to be at the Whiskey, right? And you'll be headlining, actually, the Whiskey in L.A. Is that correct, on the 15th?
Yes, that's right. That's right. We are, we're doing a headline show and kind of like a belated release party that night. So we're kind of going to, you know, pop the corks and go crazy and do all that stuff. And and then we have, we're going to perform at at Arizona Cardinals football game.
Oh, really?
They have a tailgate party type of concert once a year. I guess it's once a year or something, and so we're going to play there.
Right.
They're actually one of the teams that has been kind of featuring the song, the track Make Some Noise, on some, you know, pregame stuff. I'm not actually sure when, but they asked us to come out and play. So
cool.
We're going to do that, and then we got a couple weeks off before we pick it back up again.
Is this your first KISS cruise, or have you done this before?
No, it's my first. It's actually my first cruise, period. I've never even been on a cruise ship. I've been on ferries and stuff in Europe, where,
right.
You know, with sometimes the bus will get on a ferry. Or there was one time I went from Stockholm to Helsinki, and they called it called the party boat or something. I forget what they call it, but it was just a lot of Vikings drinking. So the KISS cruise is going to be really fun because it's going to be great weather, obviously great bands, and it's my first time with them. This tour is my first time to actually see KISS really live, and I got to say, I'm just blown away at the show that they do. It's just, their songs are obviously, their killer songs are great songs, and these guys are all great players, and the show that they put on is just, it's unbelievable. I love it.
Yeah, I've had Bruce Kulick, I've interviewed Bruce, and of course he was let go after they went back to the makeup, because the reason he was let go, I don't think they thought he would fit in the makeup. He didn't have that certain look, you know, at that time.
I don't remember, but I kind of feel like they got Ace back, right? No?
Yeah, they did get Ace back at that time, right. That's true.
So they were kind of going back to that thing, and then Ace ended up going away again. But yeah, but Bruce is awesome. He's a friend of mine.
He's a good guy, you know, and we talked about when he got shot, which was, you know, a horrifying experience.
How did that, I actually forgot about that. What happened?
Yeah. He got shot outside of a club. I forgot who he went to see. One of his friends were playing there, well-known guy. And as soon as he was outside, he heard gunshots, and he was shot. I don't know if it was a drive-by or some guy just shooting at somebody or whatever happened. It could have been somebody was mad, I think, at the club. And then he just went crazy and started, you know, firing his weapon. But, you know, luckily it went through just the right part of his body, and it went right clean through. So, you know, there was no infection or anything. So
lucky.
He was really, really lucky, yeah. So the KISS cruise is going to be awesome. I've seen pictures. I've never got a chance to go on this cruise, but that boat is packed, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
wow.
It's going to be great. I think we play every day, or play, you know, it's 4 days, and we play every day, so it'll be great.
And you're going from Miami to Cozumel and Grand Canyon. I guess that's the cruise. That'll be a lot of fun.
Sure will.
Yep.
It'll be like a
and
little.
Then you got the second leg of the European tour, and you're going to be stopping in Japan. I guess that's in October, and I guess the rest of the year you'll be in Europe. Is there a country or a city that you are particularly fond of? I know. Sometimes we get a bigger response overseas than we do here in the United States, because they're very loyal, like in Europe and Japan especially.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's great to play anywhere, really. And for example, with Kiss right now, we've been playing some of the smaller towns. We played in Portland, Maine. We've played in Dayton, Ohio, and outside of Springfield, Missouri, Springfield, Illinois. A lot of smaller towns, and the crowds have been just killer. They've been really up for it, and definitely. It's when you're playing Los Angeles or New York or whatever, there's so many shows, so it's not as exciting maybe as. But in Europe, you're right. People are very loyal and dedicated to the style of music that they love, and I would say, you know, there's a lot of cities that are just the typical ones that people would. London's awesome, Paris and. Mm-hmm. Stockholm, Zurich, those are all really great, you know, really cool cities, lots of history and everything. But if I had to choose, I would say playing in Japan is probably my favorite place to play. It's just not so much the place to play, but just to be there is awesome. As far as audiences go, the loudest audience I've ever heard was in Argentina.
Really?
Yeah. They go mental. When we used to play there with Whitesnake, they would hum along with every riff. So when you think of the guitar riff for Still the Night or something, imagine 10,000 people singing that riff with the band. It's really amazing, and they're jumping up and down at the same time. So I would say that's the loudest crowds is South America.
That's awesome. Yeah, I never knew that about that country.
Well, actually, in between songs in Argentina and in Chile and in Mexico, all these places, in between songs, people just start chanting "Ole, ole, ole, ole,"
oh, yeah.
And they go on and on until you start the next song, and then they start
the
singing.
Soccer chant.
They love to sing, you know. Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Pretty soon, you'll be playing in Cuba.
Well, you know, previous band went there, and they said it was unbelievable, really a great experience, and I think we are looking to go back next year.
Cool. Yeah, the Stones had a great outing over there. They played there not long ago, I think. You auditioned for Kiss, and you were only like 18 years old, right?
Yeah, yep. When I first, you know, and I haven't said anything to those guys about that, you know, like, we haven't talked about it. I've seen the guys, you know, every day or whatever, but we just kind of more actually talk about guitars. Me and Paul end up talking about guitars all the time. Tommy's a friend for years, and Eric as well. And, but yeah, I met Gene and Paul back in 82, it was, I think. And, they were making a change from Ace at that time, and so I came down and I played a few times with them, and it was a really awesome kind of wake up call for me. I was really too young to be doing that kind of thing, but they thought enough of me to ask me to come down a couple times and play, and I didn't get the gig, but it really woke me up and got me serious about, you know, my playing.
Do you remember what song you played? What songs you were
playing? We played. We played Firehouse first, and then we played. I think I can't remember the second. It might have been Strutter or something. Yeah. I can't remember the second song we played, but then the third song was the scary song. It was Black Diamond That is kind of, I think, regarded like their Stairway to Heaven almost or something, and. So they were really they really wanted to play that, and I was listening to it going, wow, I never realized that this song is really complicated. It's got a lot of parts and harmonies and all this stuff, and so, but we got through it and it was cool, and then they ended up calling me back and we played Dr. Love and Detroit Rock City. But at my second audition, they wanted me to just do a guitar solo, too.
Right.
So I stopped and did a guitar solo. But anyway, they've all through the year has been really nice to me, really supportive. And Gene is, he came to a couple Whitesnake shows when I was in the band and said, you know, that he thought I was doing a good job. So that's cool, man. Those guys, they're salt of the earth to me.
Yeah. They are good people.
Yeah.
I chatted with Kenny Aronson, bassist Kenny Aronson, about auditioning with the Stones. He jammed with them for like 3 hours. And
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, Keith Richards asked him if he wanted vodka. And I guess they had some vodka coolers in the and he turned it down. He said he didn't want to drink, you know. And to this day, he wonders, maybe that's why I didn't get the gig, because he played well. You know, he played for 3.5 hours, but he didn't drink with Keith. So
that's something, Ray, that it's actually interesting because, man, a lot of times it's more about how you relate to somebody than how you play. It's really, I mean, there's a lot of amazing musicians that haven't gotten gigs because they're just, Maybe it didn't jive well with the band, but you're absolutely right, man. If you can hang with somebody and they like you, you have way more of a chance than if you're like the most perfect, incredible player. Because the majority of time is not on stage. The majority of time you're together is all the traveling and writing and doing all that stuff, and it entails you to be able to get along with these people like family, you know, like a marriage.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're right. It could be, man. If you know, if he's, yeah, man, let's have a drink. You know, it would have, maybe, who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. How can you turn down drinking like, with Keith Richards? You know.
Yeah, because when he walked out, they were like, man, I can't hang with that guy. He doesn't drink. I can't. You know, Keith's like, I like to relax after the show and have a little vodka or whatever.
Exactly. Do you have a pretty extensive guitar collection? I know you talked about a Gibson 1958 plain top Dark Burst reissue. Do you still have that?
Yes, I do. I have a pretty modest collection. I'm always looking to add to it. I have a couple guitars that are from the 50s. I finally have gotten into some 50s guitars that they're really from the 50s. Late 50s, and I love it, man. I'm hanging with family, and my dad is really into golf, and we were talking, he's looking on his iPad, and my mother said, "What do you put that down? What are you looking at?" And he was looking at golf clubs, like just checking out what's going on. And I said, I do the exact same thing, Mom. I do the exact same thing, but I do it at night when I want to relax and get my mind off stuff. I just go on eBay or Reverb or whatever, and I just start, you know, looking at guitars. And every once in a while, you know, he speaks to you, even through the Internet. And
I got to have it.
Yeah, it happens.
Yep. So you got Les Paul Strats and Telecasters. Do you play all those on stage? Do you...
Right now I'm playing... I just did a thing where I've always played. I've always loved Fenders. I love them. At the moment, I'm playing mostly a Les Paul, though, is my main guitar. And I just started working with ESP. They let me borrow a Ron Wood ESP model. It's a really nice black Telecaster. Basically, is kind of what it is. And I really like that guitar a lot, and we decided to, you know, they said, "We'll keep it. You know, welcome to the family." And
awesome.
And then I actually, the other guitar that I'm playing on the Dead Daisies tour is funny story. It's a BC Rich Bitch that
right.
Brian Tisch, he bought it. We were in New York a couple months ago, and he said, "Dude, I just bought a BC Rich Bitch." And he's like, "It's going to be at my house, and you know, back in LA in a week or so." And then all of a sudden, he's like, "Well, you think I should have it sent to New York?" And I was like, "Yeah, send it, have him send it." So it arrived in New York, and he's like, "Would you play it, man? Would you play this?" And I thought, you know, I'll check it out or whatever. And he was so excited about it, about me, you know, using it on stage, that he let me use it. And the you know, I've been using it for slide. It's just got a killer tone to it. But the funny thing was, I never would have played the guitar like that. It was just Brian was like, "Please, man, you should play it. It looks like nobody." He goes, "Nobody can play it, bitch, man. Only Joe Perry. He's the only one. He's like, you could do it, man. Come on."
Okay, I'll do it.
I tried it, and then I was going, I just want to keep it really simple. I just want to keep it a couple guitars. But then I thought, you know what? It's a nice guitar, and it's fun, you know, to change it up a little bit.
Yeah. Collecting guitars is better than stock market. You know, they hold their value. They increase in value tremendously. You know, I had a 73 Telecaster. I spent $300 for it. And I sold it. It was like $3,800 I got for the guitar. It also had a lot of autographs on it.
That's cool.
The value of it. Yeah. I also had a Gibson Flying V, a 79, at one time.
Nice.
Yeah. Do you have any Do you have a Flying V?
Nope, I don't. We were in Ireland three or four months ago, and there was a Flying V in a shop over there, a white one that, and I was talking to I was looking at it, it looked really nice. I was talking to David Lowy, and he said he would like to go check it out the next day. So we went back, and he bought it. The shop owner said that Joe Bonamassa had been in and really loved that guitar. Had played it, whatever. And it is a really killer. Is a really killer V. It was a 78, I think. And David got it. He used it for the rest of the European run, and then he sent it back to his place to just put it away.
Yeah, you would look really cool playing a Flying V. You know, with the blonde hair coming down over it. You know, kind of like.
I think. Like Michael Schenker or Randy or somebody,
yeah,
but
yeah,
I mean,
like UFO, yeah.
That's what I said to him. I go, dude, you look like Michael Schenker. It's really cool. But I've never owned a V. I loved that guitar when I played it, but I've never owned one.
Let's talk about the new album, Make Some Noise.
Yeah.
Definitely no acoustic tracks on this album. You'll want to play this album loud and often. And, man, let me tell you, you really shine on every track. You know, I'm going to give the album five stars. It's a fun album. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. We enjoyed making it. It's just, you know, it's not, you know, sometimes when you're going in the studio to make a record and you start thinking about, let's have a song like this, let's have a song like that.
Right.
This record, we basically went in and just wrote some kick-ass riffs, and we wanted to keep the record up. You know, we didn't want to. We had a couple of ballad things and some things we were working on that were all really good, but the producer Marty Fredrickson thought we should just focus on a kick-ass record that would basically be the kind of record you want to play on a Friday night when you're going out, not so much deviating from, you know. Keeping it up, you know, keeping up. So that's what that record is. And we worked on it. We wrote it and recorded it all in about 5 weeks.
Really?
And it was, we tracked it together. And you can hear, you know, I mean, it makes a difference to do it old school like that, where you track it together, you record it together at the same time, instead of doing the drums and then overdubbing guitars and all that kind of thing. So yeah, we're really happy with it.
I could tell you guys were having fun, you know, with those tracks.
Yeah, it's good. There's some really cool tracks. I think my favorite right now is We All Fall Down. I really love that track.
Yeah. What is that track all about anyway? What is that the lyrics all about?
Actually, I think that. I actually don't really exactly know what that track is about. I can tell you what a lot of the other tracks are about, but that I'd have to read the lyrics and try and remember what John was talking about.
There's great guitar work on it. It's, you know,
thanks,
powerhouse
thanks, man.
Rock, pure powerhouse rock.
Yeah, thank you.
The main line is a favorite. To me, it kind of sounded like a Michael Schenker. you know, kind of UFO feeling.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. But yeah. That actually, we started jamming on that riff and that groove and everything, and John started singing, and John is also from Philadelphia area, and there's a lot of it kind of had this song kind of felt like a freight train, and there's a, there's a train line in Philadelphia called the Main Line, and I thought, well, that'd be cool, man, you know, and I think the lyrics are a little bit different than that, but right. that was the initial thing we talked about for the song, was calling it Main Line, and then he changed the lyrics, turned it into something different.
And Make Some Noise has got to be awesome live. That's just a, you know, another favorite.
It is.
Track.
It works really good. It's very simple and very easy to digest. And I never had written anything that's like that before. It was just, we were talking about in the studio something that would be really kind of like almost an anthem. The initial idea kind of came from, I was thinking about the Give Peace a Chance song that John Lennon did in the bed with Yoko.
Yep.
And I thought about that as a starting point for it, and then we kind of got the beat and then the riff, and it just kind of came together. But it works really good live.
And you got two covers. You got Fortunate Son by CCR, which is, it's great to hear that again. And also Joined Together from The Who. I don't think I've ever heard that song played by anybody else.
Yeah, it's a good song, man. Yeah. I think some other people have done it. I don't remember. There's a
Not
rock
like you
band
guys.
I think did. No, we did. We tried to change it a little bit, make it our own, change the riff a little bit, but you know, kind of beef it up just a little bit, not too much. The chorus comes in, it's definitely The Who, you know?
Yep. Are you playing a talk box in that on that song?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. A little bit of talk box on the record. And I always loved it. I wouldn't consider myself like a master talk box guy, but now doing it live a lot, I'm better at it. And it's really a cool sound. Well, actually, I found a way. With the talk box, usually it's either or. You're either talk box or your guitar sound. Mm-hmm. And I found a way to blend the two that was is really cool, so that it kind of, I can be playing the guitar riff and singing with the talk box at the same time, and it's really got a great sound live.
Another track, Last Time I Saw the Sun. I know you guys mentioned it, you know, kind of an Aerosmith feeling. I heard Kiss in there.
Right on.
I heard
well,
Kiss in there. Yeah,
that's cool. I mean, hey, we don't even know. We're working on songs that we felt good, you know, felt good to play, and that's kind of what we just did.
Well, it's a great album. Everybody needs to buy it. It's you know, represents what rock and roll is all about. And
thank you so much, Ray. That's really really nice, man.
You know, it's bands like the Dead Daisies who are, you know, really keeping rock alive. You know, and I said this to Beth Hart. You know, she's another one that's, you know, if it wasn't for people like that, you know, we need to keep rock alive, because you know, it's not on the mainstream anymore. You know, you go to FM radio and they're not, you know, they're only playing, if you're lucky, they'll play the old standards, the old favorites over and over again. But anything new, it's like out of the question, you know?
That's right.
Unless you go to Sirius, you know, I don't know, is it Sirius or XM now? Sirius, right? Sirius,
yeah, Sirius
yeah.
XM.
Yeah. So,
but we're very happy with this. We've been getting some great support from people like yourself and trying to get it out to the fans just one at a time, you know, and playing the shows, having fun, and we've been, you know, we've been really happy with the lineup, the way it is, and want to keep it together, you know.
Now, the Dead Daisies, is that the intention, to keep a revolving lineup as you go forward, or are they going to eventually?
Well, I think that was originally, I think those guys originally, when they started the band, they John Stevens and David Lowy put the band together, and they wrote some songs and put a band together around it. And they did have some people come and go a little bit, but I think David Lowie he wants to keep this lineup together, because it's just it's good, man. We're all friends. It was great before too, you know, and nothing against, not to take away anything, but this is the first time that the same band that recorded every note is playing every note live.
Right.
And so it's kind of come together now. And I think you never know. Sometimes if something happens, somebody was sick, it's nice to have people you can call to come in and fill in. But mm-hmm. I think the fans really appreciate when bands stick together.
Yeah. Well, the longer you play together, the more creative you guys can be with each other, because your personalities and things like that.
That's right.
You and David Coverdale were in the beginning, right? You guys kind of mesh well.
Well, we always did, and we still do. I mean, we're not really in touch so much anymore because we're doing different things. But David and I, I still love him and all that. I just, my time, I felt like it was time to move on, you know, basically.
Hey,
I love the band. Man, I love David.
You were a great guitarist for Whitesnake.
Thanks very much. I was really proud of the work that we did. Me and David had a blast doing it. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing like, you know, he's one of the legends, you know. And mm-hmm. the opportunity to work with him, and even, you know, obviously with Ronnie James Dio too. I've been super blessed. And now to work with John Corabi, who was I met John in Philadelphia in 19, I think it was like 79, I was in school here and in Philly, and I met John, and I was so happy that he got that gig in Motley Crue when mm-hmm. when they got rid of Vince. I was really happy for John, and he did a great job with them. And we've always been friends, but we never had done anything together. So this is a really great thing, and he adds to a list of, people I feel very fortunate to work with.
What was it like working with producer Marty Fredrickson? He's got a great resume.
Yeah, he's awesome. He was really good, because we had a lot of music flying around between us, the five of us, and then Marty would come in and he would say, okay, let's focus on this and this and this, and he'd kind of help us focus. Because we had a lot of stuff. We probably had, you know, I mean, we had to stop ourselves. We had about 25 songs written, and then Marty said, you know, obviously not all of them are going to go together, or not all of them turn out to be ones you want to work on. But he said, let's focus on these 15 or 16, something like that, and then we narrowed it down to 12.
Marty was the lead vocalist for Stillwater in Almost Famous, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's got a great voice.
He's got a great voice, yeah.
Yep.
I watch him on YouTube with Steven Tyler doing some stuff together.
Yeah, he's awesome, man.
Yeah.
He's awesome.
You've been asked this before, and I already know the answer. I guess the spark that got you to be playing guitar and everything, it was, let's see, your sisters had a cool record collection. You saw Jeff Beck, Blow by Blow, and that did it for you. Is that true?
Yeah. Jeff Beck, Blow by Blow really kind of seals the deal when you listen to it. It's like, it's very, if you're into music, it's pretty catchy.
Now, you know, I noticed Jeff Beck, he doesn't play with a pick anymore, does he?
No,
yeah.
He's all fingers.
Yeah. Now, did you ever try that method with...
I do sometimes, yeah. I mean, if you drop your pick, you can't stop playing, you know what I mean?
True. I saw...
It's got a certain sound to it that's really nice.
Yeah,
without a pick.
It does. It's amazing, the difference in sound when you don't use a pick. You graduated, and then when you graduated high school, you moved to L.A. Do you think if you hadn't moved to L.A., things might have not transpired for you? as far as getting that big break?
Because I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I just love, you know, I loved playing guitar, and I was bound to do it someplace. But I really do have got to say, when I got to California, I fell in love with the area. Mm-hmm. That I fell in love with the climate, you know, and it was cool for me to, you know, to not to be away from my family or anything, but just to start fresh in a new place.
I'm going to go back real quick to Whitesnake. the tracks you went to play, what you played with David Coverdale, you, the Deep Purple tracks, you know, Burn and Stormbringer. I watched you on YouTube, man. You did a great job with Burn.
You know, thanks, just, bud.
It doesn't sound like it's an easy song to play, really. But it's not too hard,
but it's a great song. It's not like it's a super difficult song to play, but it's a great song, and it's fun to play.
I watched. I remember seeing that for the first time. I remember buying the album. And I actually saw David Coverdale play with Deep Purple. Him and Glenn Hughes were together.
That's
and then
awesome.
There was another one with Tommy Bolin, who replaced Richie Blackmore after Blackmore left. And I saw that band. Yeah. And then I remember seeing the California Jam, and they played Burn during the California Jam. So, yeah, it brings back a lot of memories hearing that song.
Well, I love that band. They were awesome.
Richie Blackmore's, I don't know, there was some talk about him getting back together with his old band, right? At one time.
Yeah, man. He's always talked about it. He came back in the 80s, I guess.
Right.
And it's always a hope of the fans that he's going to come back.
Yeah, he's been into the medieval type stuff now with, you know, Candace, you know, the Blackmore's Night. I actually talked to Candace, his wife, and Here's something a little funny about Richie. He likes a vacuum.
Oh, that's funny.
He likes a vacuum, yep. So I guess Candace has him trained at home. I got to ask you about something that kind of made you angry. Dee Snider made an attack on Twitter about you. Did that get resolved? Did you ever talk to Dee? I know you didn't know Dee when that happened.
No, I knew Dee. I met him. He didn't really know my background or whatever. But I didn't have any problem with it. I love Dee's work, and he's awesome. He's an awesome part of the music community, and you know, I have respect for him. It was just I think he didn't really know my background with Whitesnake and how much I had really tried to help David with the band I wasn't mad. I wasn't angry, really.
Right.
It was just kind of like, it was one of those things where he kind of called me out and I just called him back, you know?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
in the end, I'm sure we're fine. I mean, I saw him in Nashville when we were recording the record and, he said hi real quick and that was it. It's, you know, these things get blown out of proportion, man.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But I'm also not afraid if somebody says, hey, you know, whatever you're doing is wrong. If I feel like what I'm doing is right, I'm going to say, hey, I believe in this, you know, I believe in what I'm doing. And it's, you know, we are all working for the same cause, which is keeping music happening,
keeping music,
you know,
alive. Right.
Dee has always been a big, you know, he's been a huge part of keeping music alive and keeping music on course, and he's been really cool for music, so I have nothing but respect, really. It was just a weird little glitch.
Right. Yeah, like kind of like how football players, you know, razz each other on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like that. don't know. Dee Snider.
Oh, wait, Ray, one sec. My mom wants to talk to you. Ray, hold on.
Okay, sure.
Hi, Ray. We have guests here to see Doug, and I'm sorry. I just came in to tell him.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. You guys, how are things in Philly?
Good, real good. Listen, I'll give them back to you because my friends are leaving.
Okay, take care. Good to see
you. My mother wanted me, what she really wants me to do is she wants me to do some chores, Ray. She got me back here at home to do some chores.
Back home to do chores. How about that? Some things never change, huh?
That's it, man. I was like, what, Mom, what's going on? But, I will have to cut out in a second here, bud.
Okay, a couple of more questions if I can get in with you.
Yeah.
What's going on with the Revolution Saints?
It started off as Dean's solo record, and then everybody went back to their respective jobs, and the record company decided to call it a band, but really it wasn't so much a band, it was just a project. And I thought we would maybe get it together. We had some really good offers, but for touring, but we just couldn't get the schedules together, you know?
Yeah,
so then now, Jack's always doing Night Ranger and Dean was doing Journey. Now Dean's freed up a little bit. I would love to do a show with those guys just to say we did it, you know? Mm-hmm. But you never know. Maybe we'll do something for charity one day. That would be cool.
Sure. That'd be great. I've asked this question to just about everyone I've interviewed. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform, collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Well, there's so many. It's hard to say. But, I mean, if I was going to have a jam as a trio or something, I would probably say doing something with John Bonham would be for sure something I'd love to do, because everything he played on just had this feel about it. It was awesome. And he's such a powerful player, and I think his playing really helped make a lot of stuff. I mean, I can't imagine a song like When the Levee Breaks without his playing. So I would love to play with him. And by the same token, somebody like John Entwistle, you know, so powerful in The Who, or Phil Lynott. You know, I would be happy. Just that would actually be pretty amazing. Is just if I could get in a band with Bonham on drums, Phil Lynott on bass and vocals, and then John Lord on keys. That would be it.
Yep, good band. So what's next for Doug Aldridge? You got the Dead Daisies. You'll be with them for a while. Hopefully, the rest of your career. You never know. But, is there anything, maybe the Doug Aldridge Band or simply Aldridge?
I have a band. I'm not doing any solo stuff or anything like that. I love playing instrumental rock music sometimes, but more importantly, I have a band that I've been a part of for, since 1998. It's called Burning Rain. And, it's with a great singer called Keith St. John.
Oh yeah,
and,
I know Keith.
Yeah, and we've done three records together, and we've got material for a fourth record. We just have to find time to record it. But that's one of the cool things about today, and that's one of the really cool things about the music industry today is that you're able to do some other gigs at the same time. You don't have to be just specifically in one band only.
Right.
It's nice. You know, it's like, for example, Joe Bonamassa has his solo thing, and then he's also got Black Country, and then he's got different styles that he plays. So for me to do the Dead Daisies is a great opportunity. It's a really fun band to be a part of. And but the Burning Rain Band is something that I put together with Keith, and it's a different sound. It's kind of a little closer maybe to Whitesnake-ish sounding. So I think we'll be doing that. I'll have something ready for next year.
Well, Keith has a great voice. I was fortunate enough to be with him and Ronnie Montrose during his last tour. you know, great gig. They I mean, they meshed really, really well together. And, yeah, it'd be great to see you and Keith together again. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, man.
Anything else you'd like to promote or add?
Well, I would just like to say thanks to you for everything, what you're doing for supporting the Dead Daisies. And we really appreciate it. And hopefully get you out to a show one of these days.
Yeah, come to Florida, and,
yeah, we're coming. Yeah. We're coming at some point. But and also thanks to your listeners for, you know, keeping rock alive. Awesome. Without you guys, we wouldn't be here.
Doug, thank you so much, man, for being on the show today. Good luck with the new album, the rest of the tour, and definitely have fun at the Kiss Cruise 6 show.
Thanks, brother. I really appreciate it.
Okay, man. Take care, Doug. Thank you so
all
much.
All right, Ray. Thank you, bud. Thank you. Take it easy.
Bye-bye. You can purchase the new release by the Dead Daisies entitled Make Some Noise at Amazon.com. Visit the Dead Daisies official website for the latest news and concert dates at www.thedeaddaisies.com. Visit the Dead Daisies on Facebook at www.facebook.com/thedeaddaisies. Also visit them on Twitter at twitter.com/thedeaddaisies. Also, visit Doug Aldridge's official website, which is www.dougaldridge.com. Coming up next on the Ray Shasho Show, Laura and Nikki London of London Rain, one of the finest rock bands to hit the music scene since the 90s. Very special thanks today to Chipster PR for arranging this interview and to Doug and Don Newsom with BBS Radio for making it all happen every show. Join me bi-weekly, Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on The Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on The Ray Shasho Show, call 941-877-1552 or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C., available now at Amazon.com. You'll live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans, we shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio, Station 1.